This is Lauren Goldfarb. I'm here at Skidmore College. It's February 22nd, and I'm here with Harry Sultan. Do I have your permission to record this interview and publish sections of it in the MDoc's spring newsletter?
Indubitably.
Thank you. So welcome back to Skidmore. I hope you're enjoying your time back. How is it being back on campus?
It weirdly doesn't feel like I left. Like I have moments of like, crap, I don't recognize anybody. But then like I'm walking with my backpack and my jacket in the snow and everything feels the same.
And can you remind me when you graduated?
In May 2017.
Well, welcome back. What was your major when you attended Skidmore?
I studied psychology.
Did you have any minors or any other focuses?
No, much to my parents' disappointment.
And what initially got you interested in MDocs and documentary work at Skidmore?
So I didn't actually know about the MDoc program until the very tail end of my junior year, when I was walking down the hall and my friend Charles came up to me and was like, said, Harry, come into this closet real quick. I need to ask you a couple questions. I'm like, all right, that's weird. But I went into the closet with him and he took out like a microphone and a recorder and started asking me to talk about my favorite song. I was like, this is fun. I'm just like talking about music and hanging out with my friend. And I thought it was just like he was doing something for his own fun. But it turned out he was taking an intro to the audio documentary class, which I did not know we had. So he told me to look into it. He knew that I really liked listening to podcasts. And the following summer, the summer between my junior and senior year, I spent a semester at Skidmore, or a session at Skidmore, and for 5 weeks took an intro to audio doc class with Eileen.
Was MDocs and documentary work at Skidmore a program that you had heard of or had been interested in at all before this?
No, I didn't know it was a thing. So prior to taking that class, I was pretty set on going into marketing in one way or another. And I kept on trying to figure out a way that I could bring that into my love of podcasting. I was like, oh, I could take this advertising class and learn how to make the best radio ads that have ever been heard, and then I'll have my in into podcasting. But I didn't realize that we had a way that I could actually just study podcasting.
What's your favorite podcast?
Oh, that's such a tough one. I think probably this podcast called Crime Town, just all about like corruption in Rhode Island. They have a second season that's coming out soon, I hope. Or like Planet Money or 99% Invisible. Literally the list can go on and on and on.
Can you tell me about what you've been doing with audio documentaries since graduation?
Yeah. So I was lucky enough right after graduating to be part of the Storyteller Institute. And while doing that, I was working on this really cool story about how there's a bunch of nationally notorious mobsters who came up to Saratoga in the summers, and while here, kind of revolutionized what it meant to have like gambling casinos. They operated before, during, and after Prohibition, and made just a shit ton of money. Am I allowed to curse?
Sure.
Made a shit ton of money. And it's like a lot of the remnants of it are still here today. So I don't know, like the Canfield Casino down Congress Park closed right before Prohibition, but kind of was the epitome at one point of what like high society gambling could be. And so this guy Arnold Rothstein came up and tried to make something to rival that called the Brook out in Church Street. So there's this place out in Church. There's a bunch of places around the lake houses, and this all kind of led up to what we now know of as the Las Vegas Strip. So had there not been Saratoga Springs, we may not have Las Vegas as we know it. And so I was working on that for several weeks while part of the Storytellers Institute. And when it was over, I had a couple months where I just traveled a little bit, hung out, and then come the fall, my first September not coming back to Skidmore, I went to Portland, Maine to be part of the inaugural session of the Salt Institute for Documentary Studies as part of the Maine College of Arts, which it was a program that started in the 70s to focus on documentary writing and photo, film, and radio. They had run out of funding a couple years ago, and so the Maine College of Arts kind of absorbed them. And so this is the first time that they were part of this new school, and so I was one of the members of the inaugural class, so have been learning and kind of honing my craft of an audio storyteller. And when I graduated from there in December, I went right back to working in this Saratoga gambling project, and that's what I'm working on now.
When did you first learn about the history of, is it the mob?
Yeah.
The mob in Saratoga, and when did you first start developing an interest in the story?
So I started looking into it because at a bar one night, at a bar called Desperate Annie's on Caroline Street in Saratoga Springs, me and my friends were talking, and I was telling them, like, listen, I'm part of this Storytelling Institute, and I don't know what I'm gonna make. And one of my friends said, well, you should talk about the tunnels. I said, what tunnels? And she says, well, underneath Desperate Annie's, there's a tunnel system that was used during Prohibition. And so I reach out to, like, the city historian. I reach out to the public works department. I reach out to the chief of police saying, hey, what's the deal with these tunnels? And they all say there are no tunnels. And when three people tell you something doesn't exist, you know it exists. So I go to the public library, which has an entire room just focused on Saratoga history, and found a book there called Illicit Alcohol, which was self-published by this guy, James Donahue, just all about his escapades catching bootleggers during Prohibition in Saratoga. And from there, it just kind of went down this really expansive rabbit hole of information. Kind of lost track of the tunnels and just got caught up in all of the gambling and the bootlegging and the murders and just all that fun stuff.
Awesome, thank you. And SALT, can you tell me what that stands for?
So it actually doesn't stand for anything. I think the program started in, I believe, 1974, and it didn't have an official name, I guess, when it first started. It was just like a documentary studies program, and so they asked the first class, what do you want to be called? And they're like, SALT.
And when you first started working on the specific project, was that your senior year at Skidmore?
Yeah, so I started working on it probably, I guess, yeah, January 2017. It's definitely, the scope of the project has evolved a lot since I first started. It originally started as a very small local project, but the more I looked into it, the more I realized it really is kind of this national, if not international, story, because it does branch all the way to Las Vegas, but it also has ties to Cuba and to Israel and to Italy. One of my characters tried to assassinate Mussolini, and so how much of that I should put in, should I not even mention it? Because, again, just there are rabbit holes upon rabbit holes that you can go into. But yeah, so I started my spring semester senior year.
And how much longer do you think you're going to be working on this story?
I don't really want it to end. I have so much fun, and I had an interview this morning that it was supposed to be an hour, and it ended up going for an hour and 45 minutes just because you start talking to people about this, and you can just go for hours with it, and it's just so interesting to talk about. My goal is to have a 10-minute version of the entire story done by the end of March, because then I can kind of compartmentalize it and figure out which parts of it are actually interesting and which parts are interesting to me, and then start working on it episode by episode in the coming months after that. Eventually, I should probably get an actual job that will give me money to do things, and then this will kind of become more of a do on nights and weekend thing. But I don't know, May? Let's say that.
And you just spoke about getting a real job, but you've been working on this project for, it seems like, over a year now, and you did SALT. So do you have future aspirations as an audio documentarian, or are you looking to go into other fields?
I definitely want to work in this field. My teacher at SALT was very adamant about never equating doing freelance work as being unemployed, and hammered that into us really hard, which is why when people ask me what I do now, I don't tell them that I'm, like, unemployed. I tell them that I'm working as a freelance audio documentarian or audio storyteller, something like that. But I don't think I want to do freelance work forever, because I like the idea of working in a team. I like bouncing ideas off of people, which you can do when freelancing, but it's nice to know that you can just look over at your next cubicle and have people there. There are a lot of really great podcasts and podcast companies out there. Gimlet Media has a lot of different podcasts running all at once. Crime Town, like I mentioned before, is a Gimlet Media production. and they're all based in Brooklyn. And then NPR has so many. Radiotopia has so many. If I could have an opportunity working with any of them, I would drop everything I'm doing to do it.
And how do you feel like MDocs at Skidmore and Skidmore College in general prepared you for what you're doing now and the stories you want to pursue?
I mean, it gave me everything. I wouldn't be where I was now if it wasn't for MDocs. And like what they taught me aside, and that's a whole other topic, but just the idea that it's something that can be done as a profession, which I don't think I really understood until I started taking a class in it. Like I knew that on some level there were people in this field because I listened to podcasts. Obviously, someone had to make them. But I guess I just kind of assumed that they were the people that did them were doing those in their free time, and like they had other jobs too, and these were kind of passion projects or kind of outcroppings of their real world work. And MDocs was the first time that someone kind of sat us all down around a table for a class and said, this is how you can actually do this. And I, like, because I kind of came into it so late, I only took two classes that were actually technically MDocs, one over my summer and then one my senior fall. So I think MDocs had a lot more to teach me had I actually taken full advantage of it, which I'm really happy to see now that I'm coming back. There are so many freshmen and sophomores that are in it that it's very different than when I was there, and I was a late bloomer, per se.
And do you have, this is a very general question, but do you have any advice or anything you would like to tell students at Skidmore who are considering going into either audio documentary or other documentary fields?
Yeah. How long do you have?
As long as you want.
I think it sounds silly, but I think the best piece of advice that I got while I was at SALT was if you're working on a story before starting to edit it or even before like doing interviews, just take a massive piece of paper, like one of these giant rolls of just like brown paper bag paper and a Sharpie, and just get on your hands and knees and just write out everything that you know about what you're talking about, like names, dates, places, thoughts, and then just start connecting the dots, because then you can visualize it, and then you can see like how the story kind of fits in with itself. And I constantly, when I was like first starting out, would get tripped up in timelines and how can I get from this topic to that topic while also not like spoiling this other aspect of it. And being able to kind of have it all on paper in that way instead of just like bullet points, and maybe that works for some people, but this really kind of revolutionized how I thought about things. When I go to interviews, I'll do that beforehand, but I'll also, instead of just thinking about like what questions I want to ask, which is one, when I first started, I didn't do that either. I'll go in, I'll wing it. Like, I don't really know much about the topic, so I trust that they do, and I'll just let them guide the conversation. Don't ever do that. You need to know exactly what you want to get. And so a lot of times what I'll do is I'll literally write down verbatim what I want them to say. And I don't tell them to say it, but if you know what you want them to say, you can better prepare for how to ask a question to get them to say it. And if you're interviewing someone, you gotta be assertive. A lot of people either don't like to talk and then won't, and so you have to fucking make them open their mouth, or they like to talk too much and will, like me, just keep on going. And then it's up to the interviewer to be like, all right, like that's great, but nowhere near relevant, so can we do this other thing like I asked you to, maybe in politer terms. It was Ira Glass at a commencement speech and in like 48 articles who said, just if you want to do it, you just got to start doing it. And no one starts out in this field good, and you're not going to get better if you're just kind of doing it by the books and like waiting for the best story, because it's not the story that makes a great piece. It's like knowing how to work with a story. So just like take out your recorder whenever you can. Like if you have a friend who's going through something crazy, talk to them about it. If your grandparent has a crazy story about how they met your other grandparent, like interview them about it. And it doesn't have to be something great. You don't have to show it to anybody, but just getting your hands in it. getting dirty, even though there's nothing dirty about it.
Do you have any idea of other stories you want to pursue in the future, or are you very focused on the one you're doing right now?
So I'm very focused on the one I'm doing right now, but I do, whenever something comes across my mind, I always have a notebook and pen on me, and I always have my phone on me. And so I'll write things out in my notebook until I think I have an idea, and then I'll write it down on my story idea notepad or note thing on my phone. And if I think it's like a story that could be good for a certain podcast, I'll denote that. So like one of my favorite podcasts is Invisibilia. It's a lot about like psych stuff, and I, being a psych major, I subscribe to like psychology subreddits and read a lot of stuff online. So a lot of times something will come across the internet and be like, wow, this could be really cool for Invisibilia. So I'll just write it down. I think the first thing I'm going to try when I'm a little bit less kind of 100% in this project is my dad's a lefty. And when I was younger, me and my brother would do this puzzle game. It was like you would get these like red bricks that were aligned in five different kind of shapes. So like it'd be like an L-shaped brick or like a Z-shaped brick, kind of like Tetris. And you'd get a card that shows you how to arrange the bricks. And you can't tell like which brick goes which shape brick goes where, but you can just see the overarching shape. And me and my brother would do it one way, and then my dad would do it. And when we started breaking them apart, we realized that he did it in the a symmetrical way than me and my brother, probably because he's left-handed. And so we started looking into this, and it turns out that left-handed people are only 13% of America's population, but 27% of architects are left-handed, which is weird. And so it made me start thinking maybe left-handed people just look at the world differently, and that kind of makes them better suited for certain professions like architecture. And so if something as simple as which hand you write with can have that big of an effect on the way you perceive the world, what else could it mean? And I'm not going to, I don't know if it does mean anything, but those are the types of things that I like looking into.
And before I wrap up, can you just talk a little bit about your experience with the Storytellers Institute and how that helped you get to where you are now?
Yeah, so I think the best part about the Storyteller Institute was the close proximity to like real professional documentary storytellers. I don't think I'd ever met people of that stature in that field prior to that, and definitely haven't like didn't make such close connections to anybody like that until Storytellers. And there is this thing that we did where every week one of the real documentarians, not the student or faculty. Actually, maybe the faculty did it as well. I don't remember. But they would share their favorite documentary. And seeing what other professionals thought were the best documentaries rather than just seeing what Netflix thought the best documentaries were was really eye-opening, because it showed showed the extent of creativity that could be used in a documentary. I always kind of, until then, was like, all right, Jiro Dreams of Sushi, that's the pinnacle of it. It's got food, it's got cool cuts of like fun fish. Like, what could be better? That and like Super Size Me. And I didn't realize that like you there's more creativity than just like pointing a camera at someone and having them speak, really. There's this movie that one of the documentarians, Harjant Gill, showed us called Tongues Untied. And it was poetry, and it was acting, and it was dancing, it was an art piece, but still a documentary film, and that just forcing me to challenge my assumptions of what a documentary was allowed me to, like, take some creative processes that I had taken for granted and put that into my work in its own fun ways.
And just because you mentioned film right there, what attracts you so much to audio documentary specifically and podcasts specifically? And what about that format to you tells a good story?
I think I feel like there's something I think that there's something inherently more personal with audio. You're in their head. I mean, yeah, some people listen on speakers and in cars, and that's like not poo-pooing that in any way, but in the moments when you're alone and you're just listening to someone talk to you, it's very hard to, like, see that in any other way other than just, like, a personal connection with you and the host. Which is why, and like, if you ever meet face to face with someone that you've like regularly listened to, it's a weird moment because you do have that feeling of like I've known you for years, like I've heard you tell me things day after day after day, like we're friends now, right? And it gets weird looks when you actually say that out loud, but so I think that's one aspect of it, that just the closeness of it all. But I think, again, back to Ira Glass. I don't know if he's the first one who said it, but he's the one I constantly quote saying it. I could be wrong. But radio is the most visual medium, because when you're watching a film, it shows you what you're supposed to be seeing. When you're listening to something, you can create it yourself. And yeah, it's up to the storyteller, but there's this great advertisement back in, I don't know if it was the 50s or 60s or 70s, but there was this radio personality saying, like, TV's, like, not, like, this TV is not visual. You can't have, like, big things happening on TV. But you take a radio and you say, bring in the 86 elephants. And then you hear the thundering elephants. And then, like, and now the chopper dropping the 1,000 pounds of whipped cream. And then you hear, like, the and it's like, you can imagine what that looks like. But you can't do that when it's a film. I mean, obviously, now technology advanced, you can make that, like, in 40 seconds on TV. But the principle remains. I just like the accessibility of it. You can listen to it anywhere. It'd be really bad if people are watching Jiro Dreams of Sushi while driving to school.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, just press stop.